Listen to Today with Sean O'Rourke with the RTE Radio Player.
You're very welcome back to the programme. Now, what will our world look like by 2050? The pace of progress of science and technology has increased exponentially in the past 20 years, so it really is difficult to picture how planet Earth will be in 36 years' time. Well, at the Dublin Festival of Technology, they're going to be doing their very best to answer this question in an event called Curious Futures, Imagining Tomorrow's World. It's going to be hosted by the host of RTE Science Squad, Jonathan McRae, and by Suzanne Campbell, both of whom join me now. I'm also joined on the line by one of the contributors to the festival, adventurer, athlete, rower, kayaker, author and international motivational speaker Mark Pollock. And we have our own Jonathan Doyle here in studio, who's going to be trying out some dried out dung beetles in just a moment. But Mark Pollock, I'm going to go to you first of all. The event is taking place tonight at 19:30 in Smock Alley Theatre. You're going to be talking in particular about exoskeletons. Just remind listeners of your own story and why this is so urgent, if you like, to you.
Yeah, well, I became paralysed back in 2010, and for paralysed people around the world, there is no cure, no treatment, no therapy. The miracle is keeping people alive, getting them into wheelchairs and out living normal lives. But I suppose that said, I've become interested in what might be possible to get out of the chair, and one of those options is an exoskeleton. It's right at the start of where it's going to get to, but what we're going to be talking about tonight in Smock Alley Theatre is what it might look like in 2050.
It's really very exciting. I mean, you're already using a device that allows you to walk. Tell us about this and how you're hoping it'll progress.
Yeah, so I've got an exoskeleton from the States. I was the first person in the world to own one as an individual, which is a real privilege. And over the last 18 months, I've done 300,000 steps, which is exactly 300,000 more than I would have been able to do before this thing existed. So I've got motors at the knees, hips, sensors all over the feet, and as I walk, all the information, all the data goes back in real time, back to the lab in San Francisco. They redesign the device, give me feedback, and we've been making changes, and there are now 100 devices around the world.
Mark, it is absolutely extraordinary. I mean, I've seen images of this device. How far away is what you're using now from what you would ideally be using?
Well, you know, this is what we're really going to be talking about tonight at the Festival of Curiosity. It's, you know, at the moment, mine's like a first-generation mobile phone. It's space age, there's no doubt about that. But the question is, what will happen? Will the motors start to be implanted in the knee joints and the hip joints? Will the technology go inside and outside the body? Will the exoskeleton remain as a hard carbon fiber device on the outside of the body, or will the material start to evolve to become soft like the skin when it needs to be soft, and then hard like the bones and the muscles tensing up when we need to walk? You know, that's where we're sort of going. That's where the science fiction is going. And of course, we now have what was science fiction a few years ago is now science fact, and I can stand and walk in the gym in my exoskeleton. So it's, you know, we're at a really exciting time, and the great thing with technology is it moves much, much quicker than the biology.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you, I mean, you're talking here about the technological advances. What about the biological advances also in repairing spinal cord injuries? I mean, will this be part of the advances, do you believe, in the treatment for people with injuries like your own over the next few decades?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not going to be one thing. It's not going to be an exoskeleton on its own that fixes paralysed people. And of course, at the moment, there is no fix. It's going to be exoskeletons, pharmacological interventions, drugs. It's going to be biological interventions, possibly stem cells. But I think stem cells seem to be overhyped nearly.
Do you see it within your lifetime, Mark?
Well, look, that's my stated aim, so I hope that it happens in my lifetime. But like the explorers of 100 years ago, you know, you just don't know. But hopefully what I'm able to do is contribute to the search for a cure. So I'd love it to happen in my lifetime, but I think we're definitely going to make a contribution.
Yeah, well, already the progress has been amazing. So you're going to be speaking about that this evening. Now, as I say, I'm also joined by Jonathan McRae and Suzanne Campbell. Food is going to be quite a big issue, something that changes a lot. Suzanne, in particular, you're looking at the way in which already, I think, older people are being given food that encourages muscle development, bone growth, takes years off them. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. I mean, if you the talk tonight is about the world in 2050. Obviously, there are massive challenges. We're going to have a population around 9 billion. Some people, like the UN, estimate more, maybe 9.8 billion. Some people would estimate, like Hans Rosling, the statistician from Sweden, would estimate a lot less. So the trajectory is not clear, how many people we're going to have to feed. And there's huge resource wars and issues with that. But there's also interesting things that are becoming available now in our own lifetime, in the present day, that will be probably widespread in use at that point. There's really interesting work going on with ageing. And for Ireland, this has a massive, massive potential in terms of whey and casein. If you look at companies,
they're byproducts of
cheese. So when you make cheese, you get this kind of watery liquid as an offshoot of the process. So companies now, like Glanbia, have more value in the watery liquid that's a waste process from cheese than actually the cheese itself.
And this what's in it?
What's in it is linked branch chains amino acids, globule of protein that is so active in its effect that it is a higher recruiter of muscle fibres. If you know any rugby players, I was talking to some of the Leinster teams, from the Irish team, about this recently. They take casein at night because it has a slower release. They take whey in the daytime. Any gym bunnies you know are probably eating a lot of whey at the moment because it builds muscle faster in combination with exercise. I was at a conference recently hosted by the NDC with Professor Luc van Loom from Holland, and he is doing amazing work. Basically, the potential is to turn the bodies of 80-year-olds into 40-year-olds. He points out that if you look
through
at your
protein.
Through protein.
It's extraordinary.
That if you look at your forearm and you look at it 3 months later, right?
Yeah.
And he made us all do this. He said, by, what are we on now? July, September, October, November, your arm is completely remade.
Really? So every bit of tissue that
every bit of tissue and the muscle strands are completely remade in a 3 month cycle. And what's happening is when older people get muscle atrophy, they get weaker. Their musculoskeletal problems are often what ends them on a back slope to kind of a really bad health outcome.
Yeah, a hip fracture, isn't that?
He made the point that in Holland, 70% of people who have hip fractures or fracture their femur will be dead within a year.
Really?
With people over the age of 70. And it's because they go into a hospital system, they contract other things in there. He said, if you can't lift yourself off a toilet, and if you think about this, if you can't lift your upper body off a toilet, you're in a need situation, you're in a hospital situation.
A cycle of debility, really.
Yeah, you're in a cycle then, which is kind of the towards the back door. He's provoking and promoting a kind of an active address of this area with whey, with casein. So in the future, in 2050, we will walk into the supermarket and the first things on our shelves will be stuff like this. In fact, Tesco at the moment in the UK are piloting that the main aisle where you walk in will be the health aisle, the gluten-free, the whey, the functional foods, the added value, because number one, they make huge margin on it. Number two, you have to be a rich consumer to buy it. But I mean, the growth now in
the
UK...
But from what you're saying, it's what consumers are going to be looking for very soon.
Already things like gluten-free. It's a huge area.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, one of the other things, of course, is that the way we make meat at the moment is completely unsustainable. If we are looking at 9.1 billion, as Suzanne said, we need to change the way we're producing meat. And so we'll be looking at artificial meat. And one of the trends that happened in World War II was that when resources became a little bit tight, there was a big drive for organ meat. And so that we may have to start contemplating different sources for our protein. It may come from sources like whey. It may come from sources like insects. 2 billion people on the planet already eat insects. And it may come from sources like organ meats. At the moment, we use offal. We feed it to our cats and dogs, but we turn our noses up at it. As we progress into 2050, cattle, as we know, major cause of climate change in this country, we may have to start contemplating foods that we hadn't contemplated before.
Speaking of which, you've got a small paper plate in front of you. There's about, what, 8 dead insects on it? Talk us through these.
Yeah, this is
this is one of the larger ones you've just
This is available from a website called Edible Unique, who are kind of supplying, as I say, 2 billion people. There's a lot of people across the globe who do. This is a dung beetle, scarab dung beetle, and a black scorpion, both from northern Thailand.
Show me the scorpion. It's huge. I mean, yeah. You're talking the scorpion here. Is it about 5 centimetres long? Slightly shriveled up.
It's lightly salted for your taste. Keelan, go on, give us a go.
As kind of...
Do you know what? Jonathan is here to try the scorpion. I'll tell you what, I'll try a tentacle. Oh gosh, it's very crunchy.
It is very crunchy. My imagining of this is that we wouldn't be eating whole insects. This is more for the theatre thing. I imagine we'd be seeing crunched down insects in either the feed of animals or human beings.
It tastes of nothing, actually. It tastes, it's almost like you've taken a bite of a fish scale or something.
Absolutely.
It's just it's high protein.
Dip it into tomato ketchup or something, some mayonnaise, and it should be fine.
But Jonathan, do you want to try a dung beetle there?
There's no attempt to tart these up as anything other than dung beetle.
No, you can see its expression.
And you just eat this whole.
You eat this whole. Yeah. I'm not going to eat
this.
Go, Jonathan.
They're desiccated as well.
Is it cooked or is it?
That's lightly salted and roasted for your pleasure.
Oh, well done.
The problem with these insects is they do sort of stick in your craw for a while. They do sort of hang around.
Don't say that.
He's already eaten it.
Well, Jonathan.
It's kind of, it tastes like a bit burnt. Maybe that's the dung. I don't know. But listen, that tastes okay. Have another bit.
Apart from burnt, what does it taste of?
It doesn't taste like I would expect it. I was kind of looking at them and I thought, well, maybe, you know, insect prawns are sort of like insects in the sea. I thought
they're related
a bit of meat
to insects, aren't they?
I think they will need a lot of seasoning. I mean, this is just one of the things.
The other thing is they're totally dried out. I mean, I presume people who actually eat these for their enjoyment, they don't eat dried out specimens, do they?
Okay, this is a scorpion leg. Sure. I'm going for it.
No.
It just tastes of kind of salt in a way.
Well, we'll also be doing
quite nice,
giant water bugs on the night, which are enormous. These are horrible looking yolks, and people can try those.
They're kind of the size of the palm of your hand, two or three inches long. They're kind of like flying cockroaches.
Frying pork brains. We'll be demonstrating Mark's legs. That's, he's going to lift up the skirt and show off his exoskeleton for us. And we'll also be demonstrating Oculus Rift, which is a virtual reality headset that you might remember Mark Zuckerberg bought for $2 billion. This company.
Do you know what? You can stop crunching now. I'm sure we can hardly listen to Jonathan here. Another thing you're looking at, though, is driverless cars.
Yeah.
They could really change the way in which cities.
Well, absolutely. So there are four states in America that have already licensed driverless cars. Finland is looking to license this by 2015. And driverless cars, the way Google does it, they have a very in-depth, inch-by-inch map of the terrain they're doing. But actually, you'll see Nissan have talked about self-parking cars by 2016. Both BMW and Mercedes are launching cars next year that will have complete driver assist, where they will sense the distance between you and the car ahead of you. And as long as you have one hand on the wheel, it will turn for you and it will keep you at a safe distance from the car ahead. This sort of transport has a huge potential to transform our cities, because if robots are driving our cars, our streets don't need to be as wide. We can park wherever we want, because we get out of the car and we say, go park in Nace, and the car drives off. And, you know, facilities like Uber has shown that people are willing to embrace technology, Uber and Halo, to facilitate their transport needs. So we might be doing a lot more car sharing. But it also means we don't need to...
I was going to ask you, we won't need a car each. If robots are driving, then we can share them out between us. Nobody's going to be banging them around.
The other thing is, I mean, for a lot of people in this country, there's that commuter belt, that two-hour commuter belt that they drive through traffic. And when you're driving, realistically, you should not be doing anything. I know some people do put on the lipstick and so on. Some people text... But you should be doing nothing. And for that 2 hours, you can then start working on your emails, because you don't have to look at the road. You can start relaxing. Some people are even envisaging, exercise bikes in the back of the car. So, you have your cycle in the car as you go on your way to work. These are not crazy ideas, but they do.
I presume the environment is very much part of this as well. I mean, they won't all be petrol using cars, will they? Are they looking at
I don't imagine so. Like one of the really brave things that Elon Musk did this year was to release all of the patents for his electronic cars, Tesla. This is this huge company that this billionaire Elon Musk built. They have demonstrated electric car technology that is absolutely incredible. 350 miles in a charge, and these cars they look amazing as well.
Also, solar cars have been launched recently, haven't they?
Solar energy is a tough sell. I mean, there is a plane called the Solar Eclipse that has managed to circumvent the globe, stopping here and there, but actually just on solar power alone. But we're going to be talking about all of these different things tonight in the Smock Alley Theatre from 7:30. You can get tickets at festivalofcuriosity.ie. There are still a handful of tickets left, so check it out.
It sounds absolutely fascinating. And Mark, you're still on the line here. Mark Pollock, I mean, I suppose for all of us, we can get carried away by the excitement of this, but this is potentially life-changing for you and your family, what technology and indeed biological innovation has to offer over the next 20-30 years.
Yeah, it's really interesting, but I thought about, Jonathan has paired me with the aging population, and in fact paralysis and aging go very much hand in hand, because we're going to be living longer, and the stuff that I'm involved with out of necessity because I'm paralyzed is going to become very, very relevant to lots of our population as we get older. So, you know, it wouldn't be a stretch to see all of us when we get older in exoskeletons and using some of this technology. So it's a good crossover.
Well, listen, thank you all very much indeed for joining us this morning. And Jonathan, well done on eating the dung beetle. That's tonight, Smock Alley, 7:30, and festivalofcuriosity.ie is where you can buy tickets. Well, now it is just 11 o'clock and we're going over to Susan Jackson in the newsroom.